Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. It's your girl, Nye McGee, a.k.a. Nye Hollywood. Happy Wednesday. We're back with another compelling, exciting, dramatic episode of the Hollywood Hustle Show. Of course, the show is none of those things. I just wanted to use some trigger words there. Happy Hump Day, everyone. What do we have in store today? Of course, Redbeard is on the line. He's going to be joining us. Redbeard, you there, my friend?
You know it. Happy Wednesday. Happy Hump Day, everybody. This your boy, Redbeard, the one and only. Make sure y'all tune in today for the Indy 15. We got a special guest, Pink Erica, coming through to discuss a few things. It's going to be hot, man. What's going on, Hollywood?
I know you worked hard last. You worked hard. I can hear it in your voice. You sound tired as hell today.
Oh, man, you know how it is, man. You never get tired when you're chasing that bag. I might sound tired, but I'm not. I'm chasing that bag, man. Ain't no such thing as getting tired of sleep. You sleep when you pass away 6 feet.
Right?
Let's get it.
Okay, of course, if you're a first-time listener, again, welcome to the Hollywood Hustle Show. I'm your host, Nye McGee, a.k.a. Nye Hollywood. I'm an entertainment reporter by day, screenwriter by night, hustling my way through Hollywood until I land the big score. And, of course, what is the big score? My name and bright lights on the big screen, of course. And again, if you are tuning in for the first time, my Hollywood Hustle Show is here to help content creators and their stars take their craft to the next level. Every Wednesday, I'm here with guests, industry players, and colleagues who are hustling their way through life, through Hollywood. Today, I'll be joined by my longtime friend, Ronnie Boykin. Ronnie is a graphic designer, painter, illustrator, and photographer from Chicago. His latest art is inspired by, and I quote his own bio, Black folk and their environment, and refers to his work as a visual journal. Ronnie refers to his work as a visual journal. Currently, he's working on an upcoming photo series. No, it's not upcoming. Actually, I'm not sure. He'll explain when he gets on the show. As far as I know, the photo series is out. I interviewed him about a year ago regarding his Chain of Perception in Black America photo series, and he will be on the line in a few minutes to talk about that. I know he's been invited to a couple of colleges. He's been speaking on college campuses about his very powerful Chain of Perception of Blacks in America photo series. So Mr. Boykin will be joining us very shortly to talk about that. And of course, like Redbeard said, he's got the Indy 15 coming up in the second half of the hour. An actress is going to join us to talk about her hustle. And, of course, if you are interested in being on the Indy 15, of course, featured on the Indy 15, Redbeard, what's the email? Where can writers, actors hit you up to talk about their hustle, to send you files of their music, if they want to be interviewed on the show? How do they reach you?
Whatever your hustle is in the industry and you want to be a spotlight on the Indy 15, send your music or whatever your info is to theindy15@gmail.com, and you will receive your scheduled interview date, and we're going to get it cracking on the show. Again, that's theindy15@gmail.com. Send me your content, man. Let's go.
All right, guys. So listen, if you listened to the show last week, let's just get right into it. I bragged last week that this week I would be meeting Queen Oprah Winfrey. And I did just that, okay? Once in a lifetime opportunity, although I'm finding as I continue to navigate my way through this journalism career, this media personality career, I'm finding that, you know, as expected, these moments that I consider once in a lifetime moments are not actually. I'm finding that I'm meeting celebrities and people that I admire and people that have influenced my own creative journey more than once. I can't tell you the number of times I've interviewed, you know, OWN, for instance, Oprah Winfrey's network OWN. Her and Tyler Perry have a number of series on OWN, just for an example. And I've been on the OWN lot so many times, over a dozen times, right? And I've interviewed the talents of the shows, you know, for better or for worse, of Loving You, numerous times. I mean, today I had an interview with Michael Jai White. I'm sure you guys know who he is. He has a series on OWN, for better or worse. I interviewed him today. This is the second time I interviewed him. I interviewed him last year just randomly. We were at a party, and I just went up to him to pick his brain. So he was a nice guy. But y'all want to know about what was it like to be in the presence of Oprah? Well, let me tell you how it all went down. So Oprah is working with the fabulous Ava DuVernay for the second season, I believe, of their hit series, Queen Sugar. The two-part season premiere, second season premiere, or is it the third season? I got to confirm that. Kicks off in a few weeks, end of this month. So yesterday at the Beverly Hills Hilton in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills, Los Angeles adjacent, they had a press conference, a very quaint press conference where about maybe less than 30 journalists, maybe about 20 to 30 journalists were invited in this little room with Queen Oprah, Ava, and two of the cast members from the show. So it was a Q&A style type of deal. Of course, I got there super early to ensure that I could sit as close to Oprah as possible so I can get my questions to Oprah easily, quickly, and so that she can make eye contact with me as she was answering said questions. And she did just that. I can't tell you the number of times that I'm sat there in front of Oprah and she's answering questions about the show. And maybe she liked my big hair. And if it's true that Oprah likes ladies, maybe she found, oh, my phone is ringing, let me hear it. Maybe she found your girl kind of cute if Oprah likes the ladies, you know. In my mind, I'd like to think that Oprah thought I was cute because she kept checking me out, not in that romantic, sexualized way. And I'm not just pulling this out of my ass, people. I mean that she literally kept staring at me the whole time. I thought I was going to cry and break down. I had to maintain my professionalism, but let me tell you, it was quite hard. As Oprah is making jokes about the series and making these cute little funny faces because she's rich and fabulous. And she's talking about, you know, working with all female directors for the second season again. They did that the first season. And she's giving me all this eye contact. And if you know me personally, you know Nye McGee likes to laugh. And if it's really, really funny, Nye McGee laughs loud. I don't try to laugh loud, but my voice is very high and very strong, right?
Oh my God! I could only imagine. Did you go out there with that cackling loud laugh?
Well, there were moments where Ava and Oprah dropped a few funnies, and my laughter caught Oprah's attention. I mean, at one point, you know how somebody laughs and like you laugh because they laugh, kind of like the yawning effect. A person yawns, you see them yawn, and you yawn, right? It was kind of one of those deals a couple of times. I would laugh at something, and I think she thought it was, like, you know, funny that I thought it was as funny as I did. So that was fun. What did we talk about with Oprah? We talked about mostly about the show, mostly about the importance of working with female directors. Now, the one question that I did not get a chance to ask Oprah that I wanted to, and hopefully I'll have an opportunity to ask her, because we kept the conversation mostly geared towards the show, about the show, Queen Sugar. But what I wanted to know, because Oprah is a media mogul, and I have had the opportunity to interview tons of television executives and producers, and let me tell you something, they all have expressed their fear about how social media and just technology in general is changing the game of television, okay? How, you know, nowadays, it doesn't really, from the teenagers to the millennials to the Gen Xers to to the baby boomers. We're all receiving and accessing content through our mobile devices, our laptops. You know, I did a report about two or three months ago after I interviewed two of the executives at Revolt TV and a congresswoman who was lobbying against Google's takeover of TV. And if you're interested in any of those links to those stories, you can hit me up on my inbox, 9mcgee1@gmail.com, and you can read what they had to say. But only about 40% of the population still tunes into the television to watch their favorite shows. I wanted to ask Oprah, considering how technology is changing the game, do you think television will continue to be a dominant communications medium? I would have loved to get Oprah's opinion on that, but there was only 45 minutes to talk to her. We had to, you know, the OWN network had to accommodate all of the journalists. So before I could get my final question into her, some a-hole took over the floor with a stupid-ass question about, hey, Oprah, considering your show is called Queen Sugar, do you think that you'll team up with some chef? I don't know, some chef, the interviewer, the reporter asked. Do you think you will team up with so-and-so chef to make some sugar-coated fried chicken? And Oprah and Ava DuVernay kind of looked at him like, really, nigga? You know, pardon my language. Did I set this to PG-13? I hope I did. If not, people, if you're at work, around the children, while I try to keep this show clean, every once in a while I may drop a word that's unsavory. So you might want to, you know, turn the volume down if you're around people who are easily offended. So we're all looking at this guy like, really? Fried chicken? No black person eats sugar-coated fried chicken, just an FYI. That's fake news, or alternative facts, all right? Oprah did acknowledge there won't be no sugar-coated fried chicken. But she did say she patented she did the copyright for Queen Sugar because there will be some Queen Sugar-inspired recipes coming up. The only unfortunate moment that took place yesterday, so I literally am sat next to Oprah. She's beautiful in person. I'll tell you something. I have a really good friend named Corey, Faki. If you're listening, shout out to Faki. I was hanging out with my homeboy, Faki, about a month or so ago, and I'm chilling at his house, and I didn't have any makeup on, and he says to me, you know, you're so pretty without makeup. You kind of look like Oprah. And now, I've never thought that Oprah was an unattractive woman, but I was a little offended by that, because I'm like, I don't look like Oprah, you know, because when you think Oprah sometimes, you have this image of Color Purple Oprah, right? And no black woman wants to be told that she looks like Oprah, and her image of Oprah is automatically Color Purple Oprah. Again, I don't think Oprah is an unattractive woman, but I also don't think that I, on any level, look like Oprah, right? Maybe our weight, the only thing Oprah and I have in common as far as looks is our weight struggle. So there I am sat in front of Oprah, and she's so effing pretty in person. Like, she looks better in person and younger in person than she does on television. So there I am sat in front of Oprah.
I can actually see the comparison.
Oh, here you go.
I can actually see it, though. Now that you mentioned that, I can actually see someone saying that you look like Oprah. You actually do a little bit. That's probably why she was staring at it. That you like, man, because this is my sister.
Right? She was like, that's me when I was young and hot. No, I'm just kidding. I've been told I look like Oprah and Janet Jackson when she was Penny from Good Times. Penny Janet Jackson. Not super hot Rhythm Nation Janet Jackson. Or If I Was Your Girl, Janet Jackson, but chubby Penny from Good Times, I've been told, hey, you look like Penny or fat-ass Oprah. So anyway, moving right along. After the Q&A session, I'm literally standing shoulder to shoulder with Oprah, literally, okay? And I'm trying to get a photo with her because I know once we make our way out to the main room, the main hall where the after party, the cocktail hour is, it's going to be impossible to talk to her. So I'm standing there with her, and this happens at every press event. Entertainers, celebrities are usually flanked by handlers or their PR people. The handlers are the worst. The celebrities generally are cool. The celebrities, they don't mind talking to you. They don't mind a stop for a photo. It's the handlers or the bodyguards that make it all difficult, that want to shut you down. I guess that's their job. They do have to protect the talent, right? So there's Queen Oprah, billion-dollar Queen Oprah. The first time that I've been around a talent, where they're flanked by bodyguards, okay? Here's Oprah walking out with her two big bodyguards, and I'm somehow got swallowed up in the midst of all these people, and we're all being pushed out of the room. And I'm walking side by side, and I'm like, oh, can I get a photo? Every time it's time for me to get a photo, she's pulled away by someone else, distracted by someone else. And then she's telling people, okay, guys, let's get these photos in because I'm moving in and I'm moving out. She literally was just making her rounds, making one quick round around the room, and she was gone. So finally it's my turn for my photo with Oprah. And the bodyguard turns to me and says, no. Okay. I mean, it was nasty. It was kind of like a no. Now, turn the volume down because I'm about to drop the F-bomb. It was a no, fuck off. He didn't say fuck off, but he gave me that fuck off look. And he literally ushers Oprah out of the room. I literally am the last person waiting for my photo, and I don't get it. No, he says, and there's Oprah gone. So I'm disappointed that I didn't get my photo. But overall, guys, I'm disappointed I didn't get my personal photo. But I have a lot of photos from the event of Oprah. You can see some of them on my Instagram account. My full write-up of the day will be published on the site EURWeb.com, probably next week, I believe. So I'll be sure to share the link here. It goes live so you can see all the things that we chatted about with Ms. Oprah. But again, the conversation was geared mostly on the show. And so overall, guys, while I'm disappointed that I didn't get my personal photo, overall, I'm very honored, very lucky to have been in her presence, very lucky to have stood by. Listen, Oprah and I are we're the same height. I think Oprah maybe half an inch taller than me, but she was in heels. So actually, I think she was the same height. Same height, damn near the same freaking size, although she's probably a little thicker than I am. Long, beautiful hair. I mean, I'm saying this because I have friends on Facebook who are like, give me all the details about Oprah. Her outfit was interesting. It almost looked what I admired about what Oprah was wearing. She was wearing a very simple dress, and literally she didn't look like a billion-dollar woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, you think Oprah, media mogul, billion-dollar woman, but she was kind of dressed like a Target woman. You know, Target is the bougie, bad and bougie, Target, you know? She was kind of dressed like a Target woman. She looked like her outfit was like a $20 outfit from Target. And I love that about her. You know, she was very down-to-earth, Oprah, very funny, very engaging with the audience. And even when the own handlers were like, okay, guys, that's it, no more questions, Oprah and Ava both were like, what, no more questions, that's it? At one point, Oprah started to, this is the truth, guys, when they wouldn't come around and take my questions, Oprah started to hand me her mic. That's how, like I said, I was sat right next to her, right in front of her. When she had no more questions and she could see, like, I have more questions, she started to hand me her mic. But the own handlers, once again, dominated the scene and controlled it the way they wanted to control it and wanted to, you know, a lot of these handlers and a lot of these network representatives, if they have their favorite journalist in the room, and not necessarily favorite, but they already have a personal connection with you, or if you're a publication, if you work for a publication that's bigger than someone else's publication, they're going to try to get to you first, okay? So long of the short, my Oprah experience was grand. Although I didn't get to ask her my pertinent question, I did get to chat to her. I get to laugh with her. I got to walk side by side with her throughout the party. And overall, it was magnificent. So thank you, God. I have to give all praise to God because I do. Everything I do is by the will of the Lord. And God said, okay, girl, it's your time to go meet Oprah. And I answered the call. So thank you, universe. I think my bucket list is complete here, guys. I mean, no, it's not. I mean, all the powerful black industry players I've interviewed now. Oprah, Tyler Perry, Lee Daniels, who else? You know, the Revolt TV guys. Now, my bucket list, Gary Oldman and Christian Bale. When I get Gary Oldman and Christian Bale, and I did get an invite to interview Christian Bale about 2 months ago, but I was out of town working on something else. So hopefully that will come back around and I'll get my Christian Bale interview. So once I get Oprah and Christian Bale and Gary Oldman, my entertainment journalism career will be completely fulfilled. Not You know, I don't feel like it'll be the end, but it'll be completely fulfilled, right? Hollywood Hustle Show, Redbeard, what do you think about my Oprah experience?
Hey, I'm actually stoked that you had an opportunity to meet her. So congratulations, first of all, on that. That's a major, as DJ Khaled would say, that's a major key. I guess God wants you to be great. You know what I'm saying? He hooked you up. You getting ready. You moving on to bigger things. Now, getting back to that point you said about her outfit, you know, that's how majority of the rich, they rich. They don't go out buying all that expensive designer clothes. I mean, they may have some designer clothes, but 9 times out of 10, they shopping at Target, keeping mm-hmm. that money in the bank account in order to become that billionaire status like she is. Hey, you on your way, G. I like that. I'm real excited that you got a chance to do that, man.
That's part of the hustle, people. That's part of Nye McGee's hustle. Meeting Oprah, the next step in the hustle. Now, you know what? Without further ado, because we got about 40 minutes left in the show, and Red Bear's Indy 15 is going to be coming up. Ronnie Barkin Jr. is on the line, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to plug him in 1 second. Ronnie, I know you're listening. I'm going to connect you live here as I'm introducing you. 646-668-8342 is our call-in number. Ronnie, fabulous photographer, making, you know, he's doing the damn thing here in the city of Chicago. I've known Ronnie for over 20 years. He's one of the funniest people I know, one of the most down-to-earth people that I know. And lately I know that he is one of the most hardest working creatives that I have the pleasure of being friends with. As I said at the top of the hour, and Ronnie will explain further about this, he is currently working on a photo series titled The Chain of Perception in Black America, which focuses on how Black Americans perceive one another within their own race. I've seen a couple of the images, very powerful images. Ronnie has a GoFundMe for the project, which he's going to talk about. There's also a Facebook page, Ronnie Boykin Jr., B-O-Y-K-I-N Jr. You can go to his Facebook page to see more about it. Ronnie, are you there?
Yes, I am. What's up, girl? How you doing?
I'm good. Welcome to the Hollywood Hustle Show. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today about your fabulous project. I know you and I had a chance to I interviewed you about this project about a year ago for one of the sites I work for. And at that point, you were in the kind of like the beginning stages. You were still fielding talent to participate in the project. So tell me what has transpired since we last spoke about this project. I know you've been out doing some speaking gigs. Where are you with the Chain of Perception?
Right now with the Chain of Perception, currently I have an exhibit that's going on right now at the University of Denver, out in Denver, Colorado. I was out there about two weeks ago. They flew me out there for me to come out and do a couple of lectures and also participate in a panel discussion where the public gets to meet and discuss with the artists of the exhibit. For me being out there, things went real good. Got a lot of positive feedback from the exhibit, from what people were telling me. They thought that the exhibit was powerful. They thought that it was very strong and intense. Told me that it was brilliant. And my most favorable comment of all was that a lot of people said that they felt uncomfortable, which is what I was really anticipating for and what I was expecting as well, because based on the premise of this particular photo series, it's something that's not supposed to make you feel comfortable dealing with the topic matter. As you said in the introduction, the Chain of Perception in Black America is focusing on how we as Black Americans perceive one another, and my reason of doing this was because I felt that I don't think that we know exactly what it is that we say about ourselves within our own race and culture. And for me, gathering statements throughout various social media sites and combining it with powerful imagery of me photographing 74 Black people, which were men and women, having them doing various poses with chains wrapped around their wrists. They were supposed to give me any of the following emotions: stress, anger, pain, disbelief, frustration, you know, to resemble that, not only do we have to deal with how other races perceive us, but this is as well as much of a, how I would say, a weight on our shoulders that we also have to deal with when we take in consideration of how we view ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me doing that, I felt like it was something that needed to be addressed and needed to be talked about because, you know, I just, not trying to get all deep with it or whatever, but it's just that from some of the stuff that I was reading on social media, like Facebook, for example, you know, the things that I was coming across reading from what black people were saying about us, it just, it really hurt me. You know, it was distraughtful, and there were times where I'm not, you know, being over-exaggerated or over-dramatic, but there were times where I did have to walk away from my computer, you know, and just have to shake it off because it's just overwhelming from what I was reading about what black people were saying about our own. And when you ask the question about why is it that black people cannot come together collectively and unify, my answer now is, this is like, just go on social media. Just look at what we say about ourselves, you know, and how we view one another. So, but overall, from, like I say, from what I've been getting, the response from this series has been positive. You know, I haven't really gotten any negative feedback. A lot of people have complimented me on it. Some of the black students at the university were telling me that, you know, they were glad to see something of this nature of showing some kind of representation of them at that particular, at a predominantly white institution. One young lady stated that she said that this was a breath of fresh air for her, you know, that for her to see something like this that touched upon this particular subject matter. So, yeah.
Now, if anybody's listening right now and they want to see these images right now, if they're on their computer, where can they go and see a sample of the photograph? On your Facebook page, or is there a website dedicated to the photo series?
Well, right now there's no pictures of it for the University of Denver, and I haven't really posted none on my actual fan page. I do plan on doing so, but what they can do is that for them to see the samples of it, they can, however, go to www.gofundme.com/chainofperception. On my GoFundMe page, I do have samples of the images that are in the exhibit, let alone in the series itself. And what I plan on doing with this is that, like, overall, the ending result is that I'm trying to turn it into a photography book. That's the end result of what I'm trying to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've been also doing is that I've been trying to, I'm now looking to speaking at different universities and colleges and community centers, if possible, that have space for me to hold something like this, for me to market and get people drawn in. So that way, when I do come out with the book, you know, you'll see the book and go, oh, yeah, I remember seeing the exhibit. So for me, I'm just really trying to bring this to light to people and bring it to people's attention. But, yeah, you can go to www.gofundme.com/chainperception where you can read about what the project is about, which basically I just sat here and told you. But you can read about it. You can see some of the imagery. And if you can, you know, $15, $20 donation to help out with the project, it would be much appreciated.
Now, you said you used 75 subjects, 75 black folks participated in this project series, and they provided testimonies. When you were reading through these testimonies, did you find or did you get a sense of some of the common causes or triggers for our collective hurt and pain? Like what did you take away from the testimonies from the subjects who participated in this project?
Well, from most people, some of the people that participated in the project, you know, there were a couple that told me about where they were dismissed by their family. You know, they explained about their experiences in regards to, like, you know, their family. One particular member said that she really had to call herself from her family because there were certain members that told her that she wasn't acting black. You know, the thing, because she spoke proper English and she had higher goals for her that she wanted to reach for, you know, going there. Like, you know, they telling her that, oh, she thinks she's all that because she's going to college, or, you know, she doesn't do the typical, stereotypical black woman thing, you know, like twirling the neck and, girl, no, you know, it's just ridiculous. Others have told me about how they have been told that they weren't black enough due to their complexion of their skin. You know, some of the light skinned women that have participated in the project.
Mm-hmm.
From what I take from it, I mean, it's just, I won't say that it's surprising, but it's making it more evident to me regarding of what the project, what I set out for this project to deliver. And from what they were telling me about and from the perceptions that I was gathering off of social media, you know, it just goes to show you, like, think that we really know what we say about one another. I don't think that we are actually reading these comments that we leave on particular articles that we see posted online. And when you read the stuff, like some of the things that black Americans were saying, you know, the most common thing, like, oh, we're lost, we don't know ourselves, we're not trying hard enough. I mean, anything, and let me just make this clear, not all the statements were negative that I was gathering up. I'm not trying to show you the negative side. What I'm trying to do is just give you an example, show you what it is that black Americans say and how they perceive their own. And I've even posed the question where I asked on social media, what is your perception of black people in this country? And I can't force anybody to answer the question, but when I posed that question to people, I mean, I've got ups and downs about this. I mean, it's like a headache. You know, people were saying, like, this is such a broad question. It's a question that cannot be I can't answer this question right now. And my response to that was that I know that it's a broad question. I even gave them factors where they can, you know, offer their perceptions on regarding to, black Americans. You know, like, what's your perception about black men, black women, the youth, education among blacks, black leadership? Do we have any? Where are they? What is your perception when it comes to us, when it comes to family, relationships, political issues, social? You know, I gave people examples. And the question was not designed for you to answer at this exact moment. You know, it is a question that was designed to make you take a moment for you to think and take a look at yourself. How do you feel about yourself being black? How do you feel about belonging to this race? What is it about your race that gets you? What is it you love? And about it all, what is it that disturbs you, or what do you hate, or whatever? But the key thing that I made clear to people was that just be honest with yourself. You know, I'm not one to judge you. That's not the purpose of it. The purpose, and I made it also clear to people, like, if you're worried about your name, don't be, because I'm not printing no name. Your name is not important. What's important is that you be honest with yourself and just state what it is that you feel about your own race. How do you feel about your own race? And that was one of the things that I brought up during the lectures, you know, and I told them that I really had a tough time trying to get people to answer the question. As I said, I can't make you answer it, but what really got me was just the fact that people would take their thought process, and they were commenting on, you know, their views about Bill Cosby, you know, Beyonce being pregnant, Drake and Meek Mill having beef, you know, or commenting on whatever the trendy subject was at that time, you know, where you talk about police brutality and whatever. But you can take that thought process and comment on that. But when I ask the question about what is your perception of black people in this country, rarely did I get a response.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, for the 500-plus black people that I'm friends with on Facebook, out of that 500-plus people that I know, 23 people were willing to answer the question.
Mm-hmm. But we'll go on social media and tear each other a new asshole because if somebody's wearing weave or if somebody's dating outside of their race or if somebody's another baby mama, we'll tear each other apart for that, you know. But when it comes down to constructive, you know, or compelling conversation centered around race and how we dog our own people, interesting how no one wants to talk about it. Suddenly, we're at a loss for words. Ronnie, let me ask you something. What are you hoping non-black folks take away from your this photo series?
Well, from what I spoke, from what I said in the lectures that I had given at University of Denver, what I told basically the white audience was that I was honest. I said that my primary target audience was black people. I didn't mind about other races coming, viewing this. But my goal was to reach out to my own race because I felt like this is something that needs to be addressed. But what I did also mention to them is that from you reading the statements and looking at the imagery, what I want you to walk away from is that I want you to ask yourself, what is it that would make somebody feel this way? What would make somebody say something like this? And what you also have to keep in mind is that you have to ask yourself that you don't know what this particular individual has gone through. You don't know what they've experienced, how they were taught, what environment they grew up in. Those are all the things that you need to take into consideration when you read these statements. I mean, some of them may come off where people may say that it's not like black self-hatred, or whatever else they come. But the key thing is, like I said, it's like you walk away and you have to ask yourself, what is it that made this particular individual feel or say something like this? And that's what I really want everybody, not just like the non-black people, is everybody, black people and black Americans included. You really need to take a look at you when you read it before you get offended or feel like, that's the question you need to ask yourself. Because you don't know. You don't know what that person's gone through. You don't know what he or she has experienced.
That's right.
Among like how they were taught or where they grew up at, or you don't know that, but something along the line within that particular individual's experience drew them to make these kind of statements, to say to have that kind of perception, and let alone with the imagery, like I said, the imagery that goes along with it expresses how that statement may make you feel. And like I said, it's just like I don't think that we try hard enough to break ourselves away from these perceptions that we have about ourselves. Some people may go like, "Oh, I know what we say about." Well, if you do, it doesn't seem like we're trying hard enough to break ourselves away from it. And that's what made me come up with the name, The Chain of Perception in Black America. It's like here you have all these perceptions that we place upon that we say about ourselves. But you got to ask, like, what are we doing as a whole to break ourselves away from this?
Right.
And that's the one thing that and overall, that's what I want the audience to look at. I want you to take the time to not only observe the imagery, but read the statements. And the people that's pictured, they didn't make those statements. Those, like I say, I just found statements and I just made a collaborating both together, what goes, to give you that feel, that mood, that tone when you look at it. And like I said, from people that view it, my most favorite comment of all was they felt uncomfortable. And it wasn't like in a bad way or anything like, oh, I feel uncomfortable that this was said. Like, no, they felt uncomfortable because I take it that a lot of them didn't know. And that was one of the things that was also I brought up to the students at Denver University. I told them, I'm like, we've all been lied to, blacks and whites, whites especially, because white people don't know everything about black folks, but black people know everything about white people.
Mm-hmm. I don't.
You know, so, you know, it's just like, and, you know, and that's the thing that I broke down to them. I'm like, you don't know about our history. You weren't forced to learn our history, but we were forced to learn yours. Just like we were forced to learn your rules, your regulations, you know, all that. But you don't know everything about black people and what you're seeing in media and how we're being presented. That's not us, you know.
Right.
You don't know the full story.
Right.
So, and hopefully so, from them reading some of the statements, you know, as I say, from them saying that they were uncomfortable, that's what I wanted. That's what I expected.
Right.
So I pretty much reached my goal.
Very good. Very good. Now, again, people, if you want to learn more about the chain of black, of chain of perception in black America, go to Ronnie's GoFundMe. Just, you know, GoFundMe.com/chain of perception. You can also follow him on Facebook. Just look up Ronnie Boykin Jr. That's B-O-Y-K-I-N. And, of course, if you're listening to the show on the front page, on the main page, the links that I just rattled off are in the description here on the main page. So you can tune in and find out more. Hit them up on the low if you want to answer that question. What is your perception of blacks in America? If you want to give him an answer. We have to move on to our Indy 15 because we have our Indy 15 artists on the line. Ronnie, I thank you so much for calling in and sharing your hustle and your project with us. And please come back later as the project develops and as you, you know, get closer to the release date of your photo book. Please let me know so we can have you back on the show to talk about the further response and to talk about the photo book and how people could order it.
I most definitely will. And let me just say thank you so much. I really appreciate you allowing me to come on to your show and the support that you've given me. And, yeah, we've known each other for over 20 years. So
right?
I love you dearly. So thank you so much for this. I really do appreciate it. And I definitely
right
will keep you posted.
Right on. I love you too, darling. Ronnie
right,
Boykin, ladies. Yeah, you have a great rest of your day, darling. Ronnie Boykin, ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Ronnie Boykin. We got the Indy 15 coming up right now. We got about 17 minutes left in the show. Redbeard, I know you want to get to it. I'm not going to even take a break. I was going to take a quick break unless you want to take a quick break. Or do you want to just get right to it?
Nah, let's get right. Let's jump right into it. What up? What up? What up? This your boy Redbeard, and you are now tuned into the Indy 15. I got a special guest today with me. Now, I've worked with her on some stage plays. Fabulous, fabulous actress. Fabulous, fabulous entrepreneur with a great mind, and I think what she's working on now is just going to be extravagant. I want to welcome Pink Erica to the show. What's cracking, Miss Lady? Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can. I can hear you loud and clear. How's everything?
Awesome. Fantastic. Sitting up here taking a little break on the 9 to 5.
Oh, yeah, I know about the breaks on the 9 to 5. Trust me. So, yeah. All right. So, with everything being said, I know that you're an actress because we've actually worked together on a couple projects like stage plays, and I know you do a couple indie movies. How long have you been acting?
Professionally, I would honestly have to say since October 2012 when I went back to school for broadcasting. At the Illinois Center for Broadcasting, which is now Illinois Media School. My mentors were Trey the Chocolate Jock, Devontae Stone, Beyonce Fox. I feel like I'm forgetting someone, Troy Tyler. And their main thing that they all agreed on is that never limit yourself in the industry of entertainment. My initial thing is I wanted to be a DJ, like on the ones and twos. And I'm actually at a point where I'm going to get to practicing doing that. I just do it for the love of fun and the love of music and just, you know, how music makes people feel. So
right.
Some of the connections that I've made have also had other connections in the industry as well. A young lady by the name of, it's just so many wonderful people that I've actually had a chance to meet. I'm so mad I can't remember her name, but she actually asked me to audition for a part in Ebony Scrooge 2015, which is where I met you, Redbeard. Yay!
Yes.
And it just seemed like after that, the notoriety started to be kind of massive. I've co-hosted a talk show. I have my own internet radio show to get studio hours for school to graduate. Like I said, everything just kind of took off, and people reached out to me and wanted to work with me, and I was just completely humbled. So last summer, one of the people I work with, he has his own entertainment company. That would be Craig Cobb from Hands High Entertainment.
Shout out to Craig. That's my homie.
Yes, he is so dope with his crazy self.
Yes, he does.
He asked me to host an R&B event every Wednesday night at Club Refuge downtown on Clark. It was called When Love Sings, so we highlighted independent artists, of course, R&B, hip-hop, spoken word, conscious hip-hop, and it just, like, really, really picked up. So one night, I come in, I ask the bartender, I said, so what are the drink specials for tonight? And he said, oh, well, I'm mixing this concoction up, and the ingredients he listed off.
No. Don't go into it. Hold on.
My bad.
Yeah, you was getting ready to go right into it, because I need that to be its own little separate part as we do this interview. So now, let me ask you this, though, because I noticed that you were a radio personality. What's up with the professionally hood? What's that all about?
Okay, I auditioned last summer to be in a web series. This gentleman by the name of Doc Hollywood, Tripstick, that's S-T-I-C-C. I can't remember what the name of the production was. And what I did was I did a monologue from The Best Man. It was the part where Nia Long and Taye Diggs were having that argument, and she slapped him in the face. And she's like, I don't give a care about those goddamn peas. And so when I slapped him, he said, could you run that over again? I'm like, oh, my God, you want me to slap him again? Because I think I slapped him kind of hard because I felt my hand sting. So we did the monologue again, and he said, Erica, that was really, really good. He's like, man. He said, you're so professional, but you're kind of hood, too, at the same time. I said, well, I did grow up in the hood. I grew up on 79th and Champlain, and part of my childhood was in Milwaukee on 29th and Burleigh and 29th and Brown. But my mother had like a different mindset. Yeah, you grew up in the hood, but you don't have to let the hood just like kind of take over you. So he said, well, you're professional and you're hood. You know, you're professionally hood. I'm like, man, I kind of like that because that does describe me. I'm professional where it needs to be met, and, you know, don't let the smooth taste fool you, and that's when I can be hood. But it's all in love. With that, I just decided, I'm like, I'm going to brand that too. You know, what this industry has taught me is all about branding. If there's a great idea, take it, you know, get the advice you need. Never short step. Baby steps are better than, you know, trying to fly off top or, you know, trying to walk off top. And that's pretty much what I did. So professionally hood, a lot of people liked it. They feel it's a movement. I have two logos, Professionally Hood for Women and Professionally Hood for Men. I'm going to come out with a clothing line with that. I have a distributor in the background who's going to do, like, dog tags, hats, bottle openers, you know, whatever. It's a classy kind of compliment to the hood, basically. Right. You know, I don't think there's anything to be ashamed about with being raised in the hood. You know, you can take people out the hood, and they say you can't take the hood out of people, but I think you can. If you push somebody so far, you can't expect them to have a subtle reaction, you know, and I think if you sit up here and let certain things fester, you're kind of asking for the quote-unquote hood to come out of somebody. You know, it's all about your approach to.
Exactly. And see, now I'm loving this because you got money streams going on, different paths, different roads to take to get to that big pot of gold at the end. That's the only way we're going to get rich, if you got different incomes coming in.
Exactly. And several streams of income. Name one wealthy person that doesn't have more than one stream of income.
Exactly.
Yep.
And so now, Pink Erica.
Yes.
What's up with Pink Erica? Let everybody know about Pink Erica and how it came into existence.
Okay. So last summer for Hands High Entertainment, I was the weekly host of a platform for independent artists for spoken word, hip-hop, R&B. I came in one night, asked a bartender what were the drink specials. He named off all of these ingredients. I said, wow, that sounds like it really tastes good. And he said, well, here, try it. I took a sip, and I said, man, this really tastes good. And I said, well, what do you call it? He said, let's call it a Pink Erica. And I'm like, whoa, okay, let's call it that then. So that first night that the drink was introduced, which was June 29th, 2016, the drink sold out. And I said to myself, I'm like, man, you know, we kind of have something here. So a friend of mine after that created a logo, and I was sitting at home after working out, and I was meditating, and I said, God, I know this is a little unorthodox, but this seems like a really wonderful opportunity. I'm not sure what to do with it. What should I do with it? And in an instant, he said, launch it for your birthday and get Mrs. Joyner involved. My birthday is in October, and October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and pink is the symbol for breast cancer awareness. Mrs. Tasha Joyner used to be a patient of mine when I worked for another health organization, and she has her own foundation called the Tasha C. Joyner Foundation. She's a breast cancer survivor. She's created a wonderful platform for survivors, newly diagnosed patients, just love and being able to celebrate life. So combining the two entities and the fact that I celebrate life every day, especially the month of October, because I'm like super duper califragilistic, expialidocious, excited about my birthday. I'm so curious. Everybody wants Mary Poppins. Y'all know what that is. But anyway, so from that, you know, that platform comes celebrating life, and I just thought everything just kind of meshed together. Pink Erica, breast cancer awareness, celebrate life. And, you know, breast cancer survivors do celebrate life with a cocktail. I did get a lot of flack about that at first. Like, how are you going to promote an alcoholic beverage for breast cancer awareness? I'm like, well, like I said, survivors celebrate with a cocktail. So,
yeah, they do, actually.
They do. And so my thing was, I'm like, I have to take this opportunity, God. Thank you for letting me have an opportunity to build a brand for myself and create revenue for my son and future grandkids. And just the feedback that I've gotten from being able to inspire younger women to just keep going, never give up on your dreams. Who knew 4 years down the line after, almost 4 years down the line after I graduated, that there would be a drink named after me and that I would have a platform to be able to move it around. Now, I know there are drinks named after people, but, you know, sometimes people just don't take that opportunity and run with it. I'm like, I'm taking my opportunity and I'm running with it. And
where can people get it? Can we shop for it now? Is it available for purchase now?
Those are the steps that I'm taking right now. What I do in the meantime is that if you have an event, prom, graduation, ladies' night, guys' night, you know, I would suggest guys not be so phobic about the color pink, and some guys actually look nice in pink. But I'll bring Pink Erica out to your event, and you have the option of either paying an upfront fee or me being able to charge for the drink. I'm actually looking at bottle distributors right now to be able to bottle it up in the next month or so, and my ultimate vision is to have the drink bottled and sold.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's hot. Why don't you tell the listeners? What did you say? You were breaking up.
With the bottling and everything, you have to start somewhere. So if I have to go get some mason jars and put my label on there, and do it out of the back of my trunk, which is what I'm actually doing now on the weekends. That's my side hustle, to promote Pink Erica. And I hashtag Pink Erica Will Travel. So if you see that hashtag, that's me, you know, coming out, let you try the drink. You can have a sample for a few dollars, or you can have, you know, a nice glass for $5 or $6. So that's how I'm moving that. You have to start somewhere. You have to.
You gotta start somewhere. So why don't you tell everybody out there that's listening how they can get in contact to set up Pink Erica Will Travel, just in case they need you.
So many. You can actually have a Facebook page for Pink Erica, and Erica is E-R-I-K-A. You can go to my website, Just Too Jazzy, just number two, J-A-Z-Z-E.com, and there's a mailing list that will hit you right to me, and you can send me an email, let me know if you want to have me out for your services. You can also email bookpinkerica@gmail.com. And there you
Excellent.
Have it.
And I will tell everybody that is listening, it is a great drink. I had it over the weekend. I'm mad
Thank
that I'm not
you.
Drinking it right now as we talk. But I'm going to have to set up another appointment to get you back out here. Hey, I know you're a busy woman, so I won't hold too much more of your time. I thank
you
for coming on the show. I appreciate
you
100% for making this appearance and getting the word out about Pink Erica.
I appreciate you, Red Bear. You are so dope to me, man.
Oh, no problem, no problem. This is what we do. We show the love, and that's all we want to do is just show love, give people that platform. So enjoy the rest of your day, my love.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Indy 15, what's good, y'all? I hope y'all enjoyed that. Hollywood, what's cracking, baby? You there?
I'm here. You know what? I didn't get a chance to tell her, but I actually sampled some of her Pink Erica because you brought some and let me sample it, and it was actually quite tasty.
Yes.
And, of course, I actually like the color pink, as simple as this sounds. So visually, aesthetically, very pleasing on the eyes, and it tastes really good. So congratulations to her and all she does, and I hope that, you know, the Pink Erica can you know, you. I hate that I didn't think to ask her, but you told me that she was thinking about hitting up Shark Tank to try to get funding for that. So, you know, we're going to send some vibes and some energy towards to Erica's direction. You know, hopefully the doors will open up for her, the universe will make it happen, that she can get up Shark Tank and get some funds for her tasty beverage, right?
Indeed. Shout out to Pink Erica, man. Y'all make sure y'all check out those websites and those links that she announced. And if you didn't catch them, you will be able to hear it back when the show replays in about an hour or so.
And you know what, guys? Friday coming up, we have the Tinseltown Tea, another episode of the Hollywood Hustle Show. If you want to be a guest on the Hollywood Hustle Show, you can email, again, Redbeard will drop that email address in a second. Of course, you can always call in here at 646-668-8342. Follow me on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All my social media links are on the main page here on the show page that you're listening, accessing the show from, Blog Talk Radio. But just in case you're not, you know, my Facebook, just Writer Nye McGee. Look me up, Writer Nye McGee, N-Y-M-A-G-E-E. And actually, the player, the audio player that you're listening to this show to right now should actually display my social media handle. So follow me. We got about a minute left in the show. Redbeard, any words you want to leave our listeners with as we let them continue on with the rest of their work day, creative day?
Definitely.
Until we join them until they join us again on Friday?
Make sure you spread the word about the Indy 15. The email is theindy15@gmail.com. Spread the word to wherever the actresses, artists of any kind of music genre, dancers. I need them on the show. We need to hear how they hustle, what the hustle is. And then make sure you tune in this Friday for another episode of the Indy 15, because who knows who's going to stop by on this next episode. It's just going to be dope. And then make sure y'all enjoy this weather, because I know it's nice in L.A. where you at, but it's even nicer here in Chicago where I'm at. So I'm going to enjoy it.
Right on, and that's it. That's our cue, guys. Just got the notes from Talk Radio. I have 60 seconds left in the show. We'll leave you. Let you get back to your day. Join us Friday. We're going to have another fabulous show. Hopefully, I'll have some tea to spill. And, thanks for tuning in. The Hollywood Hustle Show. I'm your host, Nye McGee. Signing out. Redbeard.
Thanks.
please.